Good afternoon, everybody. Or as we say in Scotland, good afternoon. Okay. Thank you very much for joining us here. Lunchtime. Wow. I'm impressed. 21st century security surveillance versus the erosion of freedom. Wow, that's a great title for a subject, isn't it? By the way, if any of you have watched the American version of this presentation, this is completely different. It's a different presentation. This is the European version, i.e., this is the version I can tell the truth. Okay. Thank you. So, I would like to point out this is not an awareness session. This has nothing to do with Microsoft. This has nothing to do with technology. This is nothing to do with TechEd. This is just a subject I thought, wow, this is a subject that, this is a story that needs to be told. This is a subject that's been written about in the press for years. And, you know, the amount of people that come up to me and go, Andy, is it true that there's a list of words like catchphrases that the NSA uses? Yes. Okay? Yes. I've done a lot of research into this topic. And although I can't show you PRISM, actually I can show you PRISM, I can't show you the PRISM, but I'll show you PRISM, and you, by the end of this session, you will know how that technology works. And you will know its capabilities. Okay? Now, whether you believe Ed Snowden to be a hero, or whether you believe him that he's a traitor, I played a little video at the beginning of this. If you didn't see it, I'll post it on my SkyDrive, and you can watch it to your heart's content. So, who am I? Well, for those of you who have just joined us, my name is Andy Malone. I'm from Scotland. I'm an MVP, like Marcus, Hussein, Paula, in enterprise security. They're the geeky ones. I'm more of a people person, shall we say. Okay? My specific interest is people, how people think, how people work. And it's amazing how easy people give up their freedom. You know, we were couple of weeks ago, I was talking with Marcus, and we were saying it's a little bit like a frog in boiling water. You know, the erosion of freedom is like a frog with boiling water. You stick a frog in boiling water, it'll jump out. But if you stick him in cold water and heat it up, he'll stay there until he dies. So, that's my analogy for the erosion of freedom. I'm an MCT, Microsoft Certified Trainer. I train all over the world. I train commercial people, government people, military people. I'm a consultant, a security consultant. I work with Paula. We do pen testing. I do the social side. Cybercrimesecurityforum.org is our website. And come in and see Paula's sessions. She'll melt your brains tomorrow. So, as I mentioned, you can get all my extras, everything. I just dump everything, all my research, white papers, all the tools that I'm showing at TechEd, slides, everything is up there right now. So just go to my SkyDrive. I posted the link just before these sessions, and you'll get the SkyDrive link. All right? Great. So, where's a good place to start? Well, this is the agenda. This is what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk around these topics as well. So what is a good place to start? I think this is probably a good place to start. Thank you. So, many years ago, George Orwell wrote a book, 1984. And the book portrayed a kind of dark vision of a future where everybody was surveyed. Everybody was monitored. Phone calls were tapped. Communications were monitored. People were barcoded. That couldn't happen, could it? It couldn't get that bad, could it? Volume, please.
Warning, track 6. Do not leave bags unattended.
Maybe you see something suspicious, but you don't want to get involved. It's nothing, you think. Can you be sure? If you see something, say something. Report suspicious activity to local authorities.
Wow. Suspicious activity. I would imagine my local police office is getting thousands of phone calls. This guy looks suspicious. Actually, I laughed at that commercial. I did. When I first saw that commercial, that's a real commercial in the US, by the way. When I saw that, I actually laughed. But then we had the Boston bombings. And suddenly, it's not funny anymore. Suddenly, you realize that's the key thing. We're not in that world that we used to be in 20, 30 years ago, before the internet. You know, we now live in a very different world. You know, who's got kids? Raise your hands. Got kids? Yeah. So, you don't let the kids out anymore on the street. Remember when you were a kid, you used to play outside? Ooh, can't let them out. Something might happen. Something might happen to them. We're growing up to be this paranoid society. Unfortunately, it's a, you know, and with all the technology that we're amassing, technology, unfortunately, brings a downside as well. So back in the days of yore, the internet was this nice flowery idea. However, the reality is something a little bit more sinister. So, like all technologies, like the written word, like the movie, like everything, it's twisted and turned. Why? Because we're human beings. You know, human beings have the great potential for evil. We have a great potential of good in us. And again, there's a tipping point that turns people either good or bad. I had a conversation with my friend Marco the other day, and in the 1940s, 1939 to 1945, the Nazis made immense headway through Europe. They cleared out whole towns of people, and they murdered 6 million people. And one of the reasons that they had great success of that is because of the documentation. Everything was well documented. Everything was monitored. They had lists and lists of people. They knew where they were. They knew how to find them. So, are we kind of relying too much on amassing information and amassing data? In this presentation, I'm not for anything and I'm not against anything. I'm going to try and bring a kind of balance to it, and I hope I kind of do that. So, we live in a different world today. Hostile nation states, hackers everywhere, the potential inside man, as we just spoke about. The interest and availability of security tools. It's everywhere. We're all interested in it. We want that security tool. We want to know how it works. It seems like we've gone crazy about security. Whistleblowing websites, hacktivists, Ed Snowden. See, they're coming for me now. There you go, I told you. the availability of security tools and governments. Okay? So these are malicious players in this whole new landscape. Now, to be honest, is it a new landscape? This landscape has always been here. It's just that we've got different tools to manage the landscape now. It's all about risk. So whether it's operational risk, whether it's financial risk, reputation, if you want to do any kind of business on the internet, if you want to work with a foreign company, if you want to employ somebody, it's all about risk assessment. And if you don't know about risk assessment, then you're in the wrong job, quite frankly. If you're not doing a risk assessment, you're in the wrong job. Okay? You're too focused on, I need to deploy that antivirus software. Okay? Bad guys come in lots of different places, often from the least expected place. Who are the bad guys? Who are these malicious players? Anonymous. Are they bad? Or are they good? They stand for freedom. They stand for the rights of a person. Yeah? WikiLeaks. Woo. Ed Snowden. Woohoo. Yeah? But the problem with anonymous is what? Anybody can be anonymous, including the government. Governments can be anonymous. Plausible deniability. Let's go and hack North Korea. Plausible deniability. Let's drop Stuxnet on Iran. Plausible deniability. It wasn't us, it was anonymous. So the problem with groups like Anonymous, and I respect groups like that, is that maybe it's time that they came forward and stepped into the political foray. Other ones. The inside guy. Spoke about this guy. I'm not going to focus too much about this. But this is a real growing and present danger, I would say. Other things. Technology. Technology is making it very, very easy to track people. Okay? There's lots of tools and technologies to find out information and information gathering. So for malicious players like hostile nation states, state-sponsored crime is becoming absolutely critical. In fact, it's one of the biggest and fastest growing areas of attacks. Okay? Did you know that there were more patents issued in China in 2012 than at any other time in history? And it's growing every year on year. Now, are they really smart people? Yes, they're smart people, but surely they must have a little helping hand. And I'm not saying that it's just the Chinese. Of course, the Americans have got this tit-for-tat thing going on. Okay? So, of course, it's not just the Chinese. It's a number of people. And why do we do it? Plain old. Money. Okay? It's the root of all evil, I'm afraid. Maybe if we all live in some kind of Star Trek utopian society where we don't use any money anymore, maybe that's the way forward with society. But that's not for me to say. WikiLeaks. Okay? So, do you think that it's right that people see a whole bunch of diplomatic cables? Is it right that guys like Ed Snowden tells his story and comes forward and say, the government is hacking you? Who is the government? The government represents you, the people. Do they have the rights to do this? On one side. Yet on the other side, you've got all these bad guys with lots of technology. You know what I mean? It's a very, very difficult scenario. So who is right and who is wrong? Personally, I think probably what he did was a good thing. But from a few drops of blood, which he's basically initiated now, he's starting to hemorrhage. And I think it could get dangerous for him. But I think he's very strategically smart. I think the way he's done it has been very, very clever. But he's an ordinary guy. You saw the interview at the beginning. He's just an ordinary guy with no specific skills, just like you and me. These guys, hostile nation states, okay? We've seen an increase in hostile nation states, whether it's North Korea. This is nothing new. This is history. History's been like this for many years. These guys will come and these guys will go. Okay? That's history. That's the way it works. This is an interesting one, though. infrastructure, national infrastructure. I come from the UK, and like some of you maybe have been to the UK, and in the UK, in London especially, we've got sewer systems in London, okay, world famous. These things were built in the Victorian era. These things are over 100 years old, 120 years old. They're starting to crumble. So what do? We start investing in money. Yes, we start to manage water systems. We start to manage electricity grids. And how do that? Let's make them smart. Let's install computers. Let's install technology. Let's take it away from human beings and let's monitor it with computers. Okay? The downside of this, of course, is that you're then opening this up to potential cyber attack. And I had a very interesting conversation with a guy from NATO. In fact, this is a session that I might do next year. I'll maybe look at that next year. So this is a very, very... How do we protect your national infrastructure? So on the one hand, you've got the situation with Ed Snowden where he's starting to blab. And on the other hand, you've got potential cyber threats and cyber terrorism. Who is right here? And then you've got terrorists. Okay? We live in a dangerous world. We've had the bombings in London. Hell, we've had the bombings here in Madrid. We've had a guy in Glasgow drive into an airport terminal. We live in a dangerous world, and we need to protect ourselves from people like this. So remember what I said, freedom fighters, like Anonymous. Anonymous believe in freedom. Great. But there's a point, there's a tipping point where that, for freedom, where you just take that step forward and you then go into the fanatic and then you go into becoming a terrorist. So, these are the threats that we live in today. So, I'm under no illusion that we need to change the way we work. We need to change our infrastructure. How do we do that without taking somebody's freedom away? It's a tough question, yes? It's a very, very tough question for governments to do. Stuxnet. Cyber warfare, actually, they don't like us calling it cyber warfare. Did you know that, by the way, if you hack into a computer in the United States, so if you hacked in, just, you know, use one of those security tools and you got a command prompt, did you know that you're actually committing an act of war against the United States? Yes? You are declaring war on the United States. That's interesting. Don't you think? So, it's just some interesting websites that you may find useful. So, it's all about detecting threats and, yes, we all talk about, you know, how can I defend myself and detect a threat? Oops, that's another one for another time. Let me bring this guy up. Okay, so, we obviously have our national organizations that are designed to protect us, security agencies, and I know that some of you are in the room, okay? I know this for a fact. So we've got the National Security Agency. You've got websites like CIS or MI6. This is the UK version of the National Security. Actually, CIS is more the CIA of the UK. Now, why do I show them together? Because most of these, they kind of work hand in hand. They kind of use the same technologies. Why? Because it'll save money in the long run. Then we've got sites like GCHQ. GCHQ, of course, is the UK's major listening post. It did a great job in World War II, defending the nation against the bad guys, and it does a pretty good job today as well. It doesn't kind of listen in on cables. It has a direct access to them. So these So if you're concerned about the government actually listening in on your email, they've actually got a direct connection to it. So basically they have a, they've got actually directly tapped into the cables, so into the actual fiber cables. So that's that. The other things that we've got, and you'll notice I'm not showing the usual stuff. This is a good website, so this is it. It might be considered subversive to show you this website. I think this is actually better than WikiLeaks because it actually shows you more recent documents and actually what's really going on. Again, I'll post all these websites and things. So this is a public intelligence freedom thing. If you want to know what are the good kind of current cyber threats, Shodan is brilliant. I don't know if you've seen Shodan. You can sign up. Again, use it very carefully, though, because you could get yourself into trouble. But again, things like you've heard the story about open webcams. This will show you how to do it. Okay. You've also got a number of threat intelligence tools as well. So this basically, this company is one of the companies, one of the many corporate companies that supply information to governments worldwide. And you can see this shows you basically current threats around the world and what's what the current situation is. And you can kind of zoom in, and that makes very interesting reading, by the way. Then, of course, we've got, it's always interesting to know how governments are preparing for potential cyber threats, potential terrorist acts. And to be honest, if you are going to attack somebody, it's very, very important that you know what their response would be. You know, as I mentioned, if you're going to attack somebody, typically you would make a lot of noise over here and then do the damage over here. That's kind of good strategy. So again, you need to take that helicopter approach and look at all of these scenarios. By the way, if you fancy a job with the Secret Intelligence Service or MI6, if you fancy yourself as a bit of James Bond and a programmer, again, Interpol are also hiring people, as is MI5. You can go in there right now. The UK are investing millions of dollars on hiring potential hackers. So if you fancy, actually, it's not that exciting, really. I know some of these people. They're just like you and me, geeks. You probably earn more money than they do. Okay, so some useful websites there, but again, it's always useful for analysis threats. Again, there's lots of software and technology out there for that. Very interesting. I gave a very brief kind of little demo in the last presentation. A few years ago, the US government were wanting a method that would allow nation states who are suppressed, so North Korea or, you know, countries that they felt were being suppressed, to have a way of creating an anonymous network. Out of that idea came something called the Tor network. The Tor network is a very, very clever anonymous technology. So far, officially, it can't be tracked. However, of course, you still use applications on the Tor network, so potentially you could track the applications. It's just like the idea of if I was a terrorist, the last thing that you would do is keep using your mobile phone because they would trace you with it. So with a terrorist, you might say, hey, what I might do is I might buy a mobile phone every day and just throw it away, okay? And you probably think, hey, they'll never catch me that way. No, they will, because basically they look from the calls in that particular area, okay? And that's actually one of the ways that they actually captured Osama bin Laden, if you remember that story. Because they threw their phones away every day. So Let me show you, just in case, I apologize if you've seen this demo already. I'm going to show you some of the other bits and pieces in there. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to close down just all these websites. And I'll close down this one too. Andy, is that Prism? Oh, gosh. And I am going to open up a Tor browser. So this is affectionately known as the Onion Router. And the idea of the Onion Router is that it basically provides a means of peeling away your information to make you anonymous. So you can see here that if I go here, it basically generates a new identity for me. You can send messages, you can communicate. So it's not just the web. Here I'm talking about anonymous FTP, anonymous email. So you can imagine if you use encrypted email over Tor, that would be pretty secure. So I have some, just go into here, and let's have a look at what I've got. So if I go into the hidden wiki, for example. So the hidden wiki for me is kind of a front door into this kind of network. And what's happened, what was a really good idea, a freedom tool to give people a voice, has actually, like any other technology, has been manipulated, and it's been basically turned to the dark side of the force. So let's try this. Now, the thing about the reason I've got an error is it changes its address all the time. Okay. Now, if you try and look just in regular Google, Bing, whatever you're using, you'll never find this. Okay? So if I type, sometimes it takes a little while. And you can see Wikipedia, what's the hidden wiki, and so on. But if you browse down, you will see, there you go. See this? All the funny letters and numbers and things. Right, that looks pretty good. Now, the way they do that, they've actually got a piece of software that every day, in fact, I think it's like 3 or 4 times a day, it randomly generates a new address. So it randomly generates a new identity automatic. So this is why it's so difficult sometimes. Let me just close that down, try again. Okay. So let's just have a quick look here. Let's try that one more time. And you can see every time I open up the browser, by the way, okay, for some reason I'm not getting a connection. Okay. Okay, like all good presenters, I come prepared. Okay, so let's go into this. Let's start the browser. But even my demo doesn't work. that would just be typical, wouldn't it? Okay, so here we are. I'll type in the hidden wiki. And you can see that the address here is completely different to the one that I was just showing. So the numbers are randomly changed. Okay, so I've got this connection to the Onion Router, and this is the gateway to the Tor network. It says, and I love this, by the way, on the right there, it says reporting abuse. I love that. There is so much abuse on the hidden wiki, it's unbelievable. So basically, we connect through the Onion Router, and this takes us to this particular web page. Now, I would urge you, this is a very dangerous place to be. You can do anything here. I'm not talking about the Pirate Bay here. Yes, you can find that stuff. But you can truly find yourself in a very dark place with some very serious people. Okay? I'm talking about drugs, guns, money laundering, prostitution, child slavery, passports. You can get illegal passports, new IDs. And I'm talking about genuine European passports. You can actually get a brand new official identity here. So there's lots of commercial services. They tend to use Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is becoming the money of the bad guy. It's a perfect money laundering tool. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's just, again, the way it's being used. So again, I'll stick this video up, but seriously, you play with the Tor network, play with the dark web, but be very, very careful, okay? I was actually going to open up some other sites, so I apologize, I can't do that, the full demo here. What I'll maybe do is I'll maybe do a recording later and I'll post it. So that's that. So hopefully in that you can see that the threat landscape is quite serious. You can see that what we're up against is quite dangerous. So what has the government response been? Okay. Well, first of all, Barack Obama, he said, we are trusting our lives to this technology, so it seems only fair that we protect ourselves against it. Okay? So the point is, what is the correct balance here? I personally don't know the answer to that question. What is the correct balance? But hopefully, by the end of the session, you'll have a general idea. So the US government response, the National Security or Cybersecurity Initiative, same as the UK, same as NATO, same as Sweden, same as Norway, they've all got one. Cyprus has got one. Okay, this is something that has had to be initiated over the last few years. They've got a whole bunch of programs in there, things like identity and benefit fraud, okay, cross-border money laundering protection, financial, commercial fraud, criminal proliferation, narcotics, trafficking, sex, the sex trade. So all of these things need to be managed somehow. Our law enforcement people, and some of you are here, and I have the greatest respect for you. But the thing is, you're not trained enough. You need to be trained more in this stuff. Okay? The FBI do a great course for law enforcement people. But this is beyond that. You know, some of these threats are beyond your basic hacking stuff. You know, Marcus will talk about, he probably did this morning, APTs, Advanced Persistent Threats. State-sponsored hacking. I mean, this is stuff you would never find. This is serious stuff. This is stuff that's got budgets of millions of dollars to produce. So we're not talking script kiddies here. So we've got the Patriot Act. Very unpopular, the Patriot Act. Okay? So the question is, you know, I want to put my data, I don't want it going through the United States. The fact is, if you deal with an American company, your data goes through the United States one way or another. Irrespective of what they say. I don't care what they say. And don't be naive to think that it doesn't. Okay? Again, I'm not supporting Microsoft, I'm not supporting Google, I'm talking about them all here. All right? You've got the Protect IP Act, and this is something that does need to come in, PIPA. So the protection of intellectual property. So the thing about the web is, you know, cybercrime is all about making money, and if I can get my idea out to the market before you, then I'm going to make a potload of cash. Emergency psychological referrals program. So there's a whole bunch. The C3, Child Exploitation Division, great division. Protecting against potential... I thought there was a light going to drop on me then. An act of God. The UK government response, they're investing... get this. They're not investing a couple of million. They're investing 650 million into this. And that's not chump change. What do you think they're going to do with that money? I mean, that's massive. That's staff, that's equipment. The UK work right alongside the Americans. They use technologies like Boundless Informant. They use PRISM. Okay? So they work together, as do many other European countries, by the way, not just the UK. This was formed by a bunch of politicians. And anybody can join this, by the way. It's definitely worth going along to. So this is the International Cybersecurity Protection Alliance. It's for businesses and governments to come together and try and solve some of these issues. David Cameron will tell you all about it right now.
Over the past 30 years, the world has been transformed by technology. We've seen a genuine revolution in the way we live, work, and communicate, and millions of people around the world benefit from that. But with this new openness has come a new vulnerability. Cybercriminals are attacking national infrastructures. They're targeting businesses, and they are scamming and stealing from citizens and customers all over the world. Our government has already injected an additional £650 million to help improve our national infrastructure and protect against cybercrime. But the very nature of this threat calls for more than a national response. It demands a truly global response. And that is what the International Cybersecurity Protection Alliance is all about. By forging new relationships between businesses, governments, and law enforcement officers all over the world, by investing in new training, and by building an international exchange of expertise, the ICSPA is forming a network powerful enough and wide enough to face down cybercrime. I'm pleased to support this important organization, and I wish you every success in your vital work ahead.
Thank you. Okay, so how are these policies starting to be enforced? So we've spoke about the governments coming out with these series of policies, CISPA, PIPA, SOPA, and so on. How are they actually being enforced? So first of all, surveillance. Surveillance comes in a number of ways. It can be covert, it can be physical, it can be audio, video, street cameras, monitoring computers, monitoring communication. Typically, European law, certainly the UK law, dictates that any surveillance taken about, for example, most of the US, you know, you start to think, is the US monitoring absolutely everything? Yes. Can they store absolutely everything? No, because there's just too much. It would overwhelm them. So they store it for a certain amount of time. The UK stores it at the moment for 30 days. Typically, anything between 30 days and 180 days, depending on where you are in the world. The UK basically want to use this technology, technologies like PRISM. They want to change that to 12 months. So they want to store that data for 12 months. That data, by the way, doesn't contain all your emails and the content. It's all the metadata. So the logs, where it's going, who it's going to. It's got the subject headings, but it doesn't actually contain the content because you would need a warrant for that. Okay? So it's still not completely above the law. But do they have the capability to do it without a warrant? Of course they do. Okay? So that is the types of surveillance that we're just talking about. GPS surveillance. Anybody tried those Google Glass? Have you seen those? No offense, but how creepy is that? Yeah? Big Brother is really watching you. Surveillance, the benefits. Okay, so why do we have surveillance technologies? Caught in the act. So you saw somebody mugging somebody in the street. You saw somebody ripping something off from a cash machine. Strategically important, maybe, for example, outside the center here, we can monitor the flow of traffic, people coming in. It does deter potential offenders. It facilitates deployment of other forces, whether they be military or law enforcement, to control crowds or to manage emergency situations. So there are definite benefits to surveillance. However, going back to 2001, what we had in really 2001 really kind of changed everything. September 11th, 2001, and we also had the 7/7 attacks in London, and also here in Madrid as well. That changes the situation, okay? So we're going to talk about that in this next section. And the question is, does this surveillance go too far? And I've already kind of said this. It's not recording everything, it's just kind of recording the metadata. And from that metadata, they can then sift through that and they can basically say, hey, hang on, we want to flag this person up. And how do they flag it up? It's normally through keywords, whether those keywords be verbal, written, transmitted, what have you. So there's a series of keywords that you say. So if you typed in an email the word nuclear, now if you sent it once, that might be fine. If you sent it 20 times, that might flag up. That's the kind of flagging that I'm talking about here. Andy, what about my rights? What about the Fourth Amendment in the United States? Okay, Fourth Amendment in the United States says there to protect against unreasonable warrants and seizures. What's unreasonable? What's unreasonable? What's your definition of unreasonable? This is how they're getting around it. See? And it's not just here. It's the European Union, it's China, it's Canada, it's the UK. It's all the same. Unreasonable seizure. So, unnecessary. What's unnecessary? We live in a world where it might be necessary. It's all words. But this is what you vote for. So, this is the kind of the legal aspect of it there on the left. So this is kind of the procedure. So if you were suspected of being a terrorist, you know, you were constantly vacationing in Pakistan or something. You know, it's a very nice place, I'm sure. You know, you might decide to go for a camping trip in Pakistan somewhere. But if you're constantly going there and maybe taking a little tourist bus to Afghanistan, you know, that is gonna flag up sometime. So, you know, I've got your name. I can see your unusual travel. That's going to flag up with the security services, and it will warrant further investigation. If you are going into a DIY store and you're constantly buying certain chemicals, yes? Okay, you might be putting them, you might be have a big farm. You might use fertilizer. You know, but if you're not a farmer and you're buying lots of fertilizer, that would flag up, okay? And again, you can see here the procedure on the right. I don't know, you probably can't read that, but on the right there, it talks about the steps that most governments or most law enforcement agencies need to take in order to move forward there. So, question is Big Brother watching you? Well, by the looks of some of you in the audience, I would probably say yes, to be honest. Gee, I thought that'd get a laugh, but it didn't. There you go. So, is Big Brother watching you? Well, street cameras, bank auto tellers, public area monitoring, cameras on public transport, credit card monitoring, employee record monitoring, telephone logs, IP address monitoring. Of course, we're all being monitored at one point or another. So, a game of drones. Don't you just love that TV show, by the way, Game of Thrones? It's my favorite show. So, game of drones. These drones are being deployed now in U.S., in fact, not just U.S. cities, but also U.S. for non-military use. So they're being deployed for non-military use. They're actually less expensive than sending up a helicopter with two guys to monitor. So, and these things are a little bit cheaper than obviously fueling helicopters and people. The UK and also the European Union have bought these as well, so it's not just the Americans. But at what point would it be acceptable to have these flying around the skies of Madrid? Is that acceptable? Would you feel comfortable with that? Would you feel comfortable knowing that your every actions can now be photographed? Well, we know that we can be photographed from space. I mean, the commercial version of this is Google Earth or Bing Maps, where you can, you know the thing that makes me laugh, by the way, you know, Google Earth, where's the one place? You can go anywhere in the world in Google Earth. Where do you go? You go to your house. Why? Why do you go to your house? This is my house. Yeah? That's true, by the way. So the next generation of satellite, by the way, have got facial recognition. So we don't need these. We've got these. We can see you from miles up, and we've got facial recognition. Heat signature recognition. One way or another, we're going to get you. Okay? This is true. This is not fiction. This is the world's smallest drone. Okay? It's a mosquito drone. It can take DNA. It can be remote controlled for up to a mile away. Tiny. That's scary stuff, huh? That was leaked on WikiLeaks, by the way. That was one of the WikiLeaks. Okay, so some of the technologies that are out there, this is a company called FinSpy. You won't find them in the phone book. This is a company that produced law enforcement technology. And this is one of their technologies. This is called FinSpy ISP, and essentially, or FinFly rather, and essentially what this does is at the ISP level. So this would be done at the ISP or the phone provider. Essentially, we would go in, law enforcement would go in and actually install an appliance directly at the ISP level. So irrelevant of where you're hosting your website or whatever, this is taking place at the actual core level or at the telephone exchange, for example. iTunes, I never use that. So, there you go. He's got complete access to your system. Okay, now we start getting interesting. This is where the presentation is completely new for TechEd Europe. Okay? Room 64-1A. How can I tell you about this? Right. where's a good place to start? Back in the 1990s, a group of guys came together. And they worked at the CIA, and they worked at the NSA. I'm not going to give names because I want to live at the end of this session. Okay? So basically, these group of guys came together and they said, okay, in the case of a cyber attack, we do not have the defenses. We do not have the technology. We have no way of sifting through data. GCHQ were the same. We have no way of sifting through data. So, after September of the 11th, 2001, George Bush immediately came forward and said, okay, we need something here. Now, Project Echelon, and this is basically where it really started. So, 64-1A, in fact, I can even show you the building. In the slide deck, I've got the Google Earth settings. You can see the building and so on. So basically what it is, top secret document, don't ask where I got this, which basically ordered the telephone communications in the United States and associated locations to start monitoring all traffic. Okay? So that was the first thing. So it's located in the SBC comms building in Folsom Street, San Francisco. It's AT&T. Basically, this is what we call an SG3 seizure room. And this is where, basically, there's about 20 or 30 of these in the United States alone, and there are a number of these throughout the world, and also Europe as well. They're designed to tap directly in to fiber optic cables. And that traffic is then directed to the Utah data center in the United States. So it's fed by fiber lines, and all that traffic then goes to the United States. So William Binney, basically, he was part of the group that kind of put this program together. And he basically had some concerns about the fact that George Bush was saying basically we need to monitor everybody without unreasonable reasons, or without reasonable reasons. So this is the diagrams. This is some documentation that I've included. Don't ask me where I got it. So this then moved forward. So after 9/11, one of the first projects to come out of the National Security Agency was a project called Thin Thread. And Thin Thread, by the name, was the ability to basically take massive amounts of data and start basically picking off what you want. Okay? To be honest, it was okay. The idea was you could extract the data and you could then use it for further analysis. So it was basically to gather and analyze, sort through massive amounts of data. And we're talking petabytes of data. So back, we're talking 10 years ago, we're talking, this is like big data. You know this big term, big data at the moment. However, the project was abandoned by the National Security Agency. It didn't work. It was too costly at the time. And then President Bush said, no, we don't like it. So then September of the 11th happened, and this project was then replaced with a project called Project Trailblazer. And of course, the other project was something called warrantless wiretapping. So basically where if you were suspected of being a bad guy, they didn't need a warrant. So they could just tap your phone lines, tap your email without any kind of warrants. That actual task has actually never been removed. It's just been replaced. So that is still in play, by the way. So now we come to 2012, 2013. The NSA has a project now called Boundless Informant. And this is really for big data mining. Now, as you can imagine, most of the National Security Agency and the CIA is not military. Most of it is actually with third-party corporations and companies and big organizations. So a number of these companies have come together and they've got contractors in play for this. So Boundless Informant essentially works like this. So in the middle we have the very large, one of the largest data centers in the US. This is the Utah data center. So data that comes in from satellites that's monitored comes into the aerospace data analysis facility. You can see here how the NSA and CIA kind of work together and they share the same kind of technologies here. So it doesn't just deal with both domestic incidents, but it also deals with international incidents as well. So this is Boundless Informant, and you can see that Boundless Informant essentially is a big data analysis tool. So on the surface, this is just one of the tools they use, by the way, not all just the tool. This is just one of the tools. So the idea is, in the world, it can show you where are those keywords being flagged up, where are people being subversive, where is it being flagged up, and you can drill down into this and really get a handle on what is going on. So basically, it's a very powerful data mining tool. So in my last presentation, I showed you Perturva. Think Perturva on steroids, and then you'll get the idea. It uses big data capture. It looks for visible trends, not just in words, but in communications, in website searches, and so on. As you can appreciate, it takes the data in blobs. So if you're a developer, you know about big blob data. So it takes blobs of data, and it basically stores them, and then it basically sifts through them. The technology behind this, if you want to know how this technology works, then look behind the actual service. These are some of the companies that supply, and you'd be surprised, a lot of it is actually open source. So, and you can actually go in and look, and you'll pretty much work it out, how it actually works. So I put in some links. There's also some extra links in these slides as well, again, which I'll make available to you. Another technology is a product called MapReduce. So this is the graphical kind of side of it. So you've got the data mining tool there, and this is the MapReduce here. And you can see it uses Apache Hadoop software and hardware as well. It's got many, many applications, this technology. So not just military, but it's also got commercial energy. So you'll probably see it in many different guises. So now we come to PRISM, okay? And you'll recognize this slide. This is Mike Oldfield, Tubular Bells. Remember the album? This is Tubular Bells. So the idea is you've got a light prism here, and you shine something through it, and you get a pile of stuff. Actually, I really should change it round. That's better. Because that is what PRISM does. It takes all the noise coming in, and it allows you to filter through specific bits of information. So essentially here, the type of data that I'm talking about, we refer to it as citizen data. As I've mentioned, things like internet searches. You'll notice it's different from phone tapping. Phone tapping uses a different technology. So this is alongside that. So internet browsing searches, the histories, downloads that the user's downloading. So if you're downloading child porn or something like that, you're going to malicious websites, you're sending SMS messages, you might be using Skype or whatever you're using. It's going to get all of that data. Things like cell phone data, so mobile, SMS messages, social media, everything. Credit card transactions. It looks for surveillance cameras. It hooks into all the surveillance cameras. So you're probably thinking, ooh, born identity type stuff. And more importantly as well is it looks for trends in the data. So again, is the NSA monitoring you? Again, give them a reason to monitor you. That's the point I'm making with this. So it's designed to not just capture the data, it's designed to analyze the data. So Boundless Informant basically is a blob data tool. This is a tool which allows you to refine it, shall we say. And that information can then be passed to the operations team. So whatever assets the operations decide to put in play, whether it's a military operation or what have you. Now, I mentioned the NSA word game. This is some information on this. Again, I'm providing much more on my stuff. And you can see that there's lists of words. So this is probably the most up-to-date word list that's out there. So this word list is actually it's shared with the FBI, NSA, Mossad, MI6, and all of those. Some people in the back are looking nervous there, by the way. Sorry. So basically, these are some of the slides, of course, that Ed Snowden has leaked. So far, he's leaked about 8 slides from a deck of 30 slides. Now, and the question is, has he given secrets away? Well, the question is, to be honest, he's not given that much away. So, the fact is that he spoke to the Russians and Chinese, probably the worst people that you could speak to. So you can see here that much of the world's communication flows, and depending on where you are, so Europe and the US, for example, you can see that the bandwidth that they have to play with. Also, we've got here companies that signed up to PRISM. Now, whether they signed up voluntarily or not, in fact, Microsoft was one of the first. I'll probably never work for Microsoft again now, saying that. Apple, just a few months ago, was one of the latest companies to sign up to the PRISM program. And this program costs $20 million a year to run. So this is just the software with the company that actually designed PRISM. This is just the maintenance costs per year of running this program. So we can see here two technologies that we basically have here. Upstream. Oh, somebody's birthday. How nice. So we've got Upstream here. Upstream basically deals with, as you'll recognize the name there, Blarney. He was involved with the phone tapping side. So the phone tapping is the top bit. The bottom bit there is all about the PRISM program itself. And you can see the types of information that it can take. So it can look for behavior patterns, what people are browsing for, searching habits. So if you've got a potential terrorist, they're looking for websites on bomb making, for example, that is going to flag up and it will alert the authorities. So who designed PRISM? Well, PRISM is designed by a company called Sisense. It's an Israeli company. Interestingly, when I phoned them, I spoke with a nice Israeli lady, and they phoned me back. It was an American guy. Okay. The NSA basically has access to millions, basically everybody, with this potential technology. And obviously, their investment has to be, they need to get their investment back. How do they do that? They lease it to other governments. So, for example, the United Kingdom are using this technology alongside the NSA as well. So this is PRISM. So if I just go in here, and where are we? Oh, let me just take this. Okay, so this is an interesting website, Investment Watch, and this tells you all the companies that designed PRISM. So all the different companies, who's investing in the actual program. The other one is the actual software itself. So this is the actual program, and you can see it looks quite innocent. So this is Sisense's website. So massive data. So it talks about the product, the different customers. I must confess, when I contacted them, they didn't come back to me. and if you try and get an online demo there, I couldn't get it working. However, I found another location. And again, I'll give you all of these links. And you actually get the idea. This is PRISM. So this is the technology behind PRISM. Now, in the demo here, you can see that I can go back years, months, days, weeks, what have you. The demo is just really talking about disasters. The types of disasters that we're looking at, obviously, you might be interested in terrorist attacks. So where have the terrorist attacks been taking place? What was the severity level? You can really, really drill down into this. So this is what we mean by analysis. So if you can then take that to the military fold, and you can imagine if you're looking for specific types of searches on the internet, you can drill down into that. Who are doing those searches? Where are those searches taking place? That's how PRISM works. That's one of the technologies behind it. So have a look at Sisense, very interesting website. Best of luck in getting a demo from them. Okay. But does it stop there? I have to actually say no, it doesn't stop there. The National Security Agency and along with other worldwide, they actually have a program called GIG. This is something called, the idea is we have a global information grid. So the idea is that you can look at all the global communications and analyze everything irrespective of where you are in the world. So basically, this is a fundamental shift in how governments are collecting information. It looks and it's providing and connecting to a globally connected world, and of which cloud computing is right at the center of that. So it uses a lot of commercial technologies. So where is my freedom in all of this? I don't know if anybody has ever been to Washington, D.C. Has anybody been? Raise your hand. Yeah? Okay. If you've ever gone, if you ever go to D.C., go and stand at the Lincoln Memorial. Just stand there and read the words on those stones. They are amazing words. And sometimes I feel, I look at those words now and I think, we've really lost our way in the world. Commercialism has really taken over. So when we talk about freedom, are we talking about the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press, the freedom of assembly, the freedom of religion? These are fundamental things that we should all be able to enjoy. But why is my liberty and freedom censored? What reasons? Well, a number of reasons. In times of war, secret, sensitive material, whether it be communications, whether it be print, whether it be somebody saying something. The idea is it protects lives. In World War II, for example, this was a very important factor. Protects against racial and religious hatred. It's all very well, I have the greatest respect for people. They can follow whatever religion they want. And irrespective of the religion, they should not say racial hatred. Press misuse, okay? Crossing the line. Child protection. Protecting an individual's right to privacy. These are all fundamental things that we should be able to enjoy. So, Andy, how can I protect myself in this surveyed world? Are there any tools that you recommend? Well, if you're truly paranoid, you can get one of these. This is an anti-surveillance pen. So I've actually got one. You walk into a hotel room and just walk around the hotel room and it will look for any potential hidden cameras or bugs. And it will put off a high-pitched screech. A guy in Japan had come up with this one. Okay, I don't want to be found on the web. I don't want to go through security. Yeah, so you can actually put a false fingerprint on. Yeah, interesting. And if you're worried about somebody tracking your phone, then you can get this little gadget. Okay, there's a whole bunch of stuff like this. Again, truly though, is this going to have you hidden from the government? Okay, is it making us paranoid, all of this? So are we living in this paranoid world now? Are we paranoid, or are we at a stage where we just have to accept this? Paranoia in everyday society. I saw this commercial a couple of months ago in the US. I was in Seattle a few months ago. And this is a commercial that was on TV. Check this out.
Recent statistics about teens' behavior show disturbing facts. 6,000 children under the age of 18 start smoking every day. 80% of high school seniors have used alcohol, and 62% have been drunk. 20% of them are skipping school. 8 out of 10 teens are lying to their parents about something. 15% of teens have sent and received sexually suggestive images. Stop wondering whether your son or daughter is included in these statistics. Now each parent is able to learn the truth and protect your kids from harmful behaviors. How? By installing the Mobile Monitor application on their kid's phone. Mobile Monitor satisfies all of your needs as a parent. It's the perfect cell phone tracking application to monitor your child's behavior and do it in total secrecy. Find out whom they're talking with. Learn whom they're texting with and what about, meeting at the bar and skipping school. Know where they are at any time, at school or somewhere else. Monitor all images, video, and audio files for any inappropriate content, violence, or sexuality. Check web pages visited by your teen's phone and more. With the Mobile Monitor application, you'll be one step ahead and learn everything that your teen is hiding from you.
Who needs the NSA when you've got mom and dad? Isn't that insane? Have you ever seen anything so insane? You know, 8 out of 10 kids are lying about something. Of course they are. They're kids. Let them be kids. So we're starting this paranoia at a really, really early age. It's insane. So what's my conclusion in all of this? I've tried to provide you with the argument for surveillance, and I've tried to provide you with the argument against surveillance. What's the correct way? What's the right answer here? Well, first of all, we're living in a world where most of the internet technology is controlled by the US. Okay? They control DNS, they control encryption technologies, NSA Suite B encryption. They've got the keys. Is it right that one country has the rights to hold everything? So maybe it's time that this was dispersed in an international organization. That's just my thoughts. Looking at the internet, though, we need to move away from this fear. We're now in a different time. The world has moved on. We now, I think, need to be more open with the internet. Maybe it's time for changes. Who knows? Just a few ideas on a Wednesday afternoon. So, we've talked about the argument for. We talked about the argument against. I've showed you some of the technologies behind PRISM. I hope it's made interesting thoughts. Just to remind you, you can get access to all my extra content by signing up to my Twitter, and the link's there. I posted the link, and you can get access to my SkyDrive. Please do come along. I've got a top 10 cybercrime thing this afternoon. It's a lot of fun. Come along. But I really appreciate you coming to my session. I'm Andy Malone. Thank you very much.